Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello again, friends. It's been so long. What have you been doing with yourself? Welcome along to the second part of our Superman double bill with the composers that collaborated with James Gunn on the movie. First up was the wonderful David Fleming in an episode that's already available for you to listen to for your listening pleasure. And now it's the turn of John Murphy, who has worked with James on a number of projects. So we'll begin with his cue, Luther the Traitor.
Good, good. Where are you from?
I'm from a little fishing village in Scotland called Anstruther on the east coast of Fife.
Well, what a lovely accent.
Oh, thanks very much. You still got yours?
24 years, not a trace of it's left me. No, people say, oh, when did you get in? You know, like I flew in last week. I'm like 2002.
Oh, bless you.
Because I've never left the studio in 23 years. Been stuck in this place.
Oh man, well, you've been keeping us entertained, that's for sure. It's really great to chat to you. I mean, it's so kind of weirdly serendipitous as well, because I just spent some time with Danny actually a couple of weeks ago talking about the new.
Yeah, how was it?
Yeah, he was on great form. You know, his enthusiasm never wavers. It's just it's a beautiful thing to even get 5 minutes. But what was great within that conversation and also the wider conversation around that film coming out was just really a beautiful way to celebrate your huge part of that first film and how, you know, your work on that made us all kind of connect with that original story.
Yeah, and it was fun. I think what worked on 28 Days Later was we had no idea that we were doing anything that was remotely going to be in any way successful or groundbreaking. When Danny rang me, I think he said something like, I just got to LA and I was finishing a movie here, because I would go LA and then back to Liverpool and LA and back to Liverpool. I was still commuting at that point. And he said, look, I'm doing this zombie home movie. No one wants me to make it. No one wants to distribute it, and probably nobody will want to go and see it. You're up for it? And I was like, yeah. And that's what he said. He said, but we can do whatever we want with it. And I went, awesome, I'm in. And that was 28 days later. So the whole process was just like...
pressure's off.
Around. Yeah. You know, at one point, there was no music in it. It was just all sound effects, because Danny had this idea. He called it Detritus or Detrius or something, where we just get snippets of audio, like bits from a radio, and we just scatter that around, you know, in the air, in the ether. There wasn't even any music left, you know. So I had like 2 weeks of just recording crazy bits off the radio and people talking, and it was awesome. It made the movie so hard to watch, because it was so visceral and so, it was just, you know, we both loved it, but it was just too much. And one day Danny went, maybe we need a bit of music, you know, just to soften the edges, you know. So, so it was great, because we were just doing what we wanted, you know.
I've got a wee show that I do here as well on, it's a streaming channel called Radio 3, but it's Radio 3 Unwind. And we were actually playing some stuff from Sunshine couple of weeks ago as well, which was just like, oh, it's like weird. You've been like so ever present in my world, particularly over the last couple of weeks. It's been great. And then getting to chat to James about you as well the other day. So your ears must have been burning. How did you guys first sort of connect and work together? Because that's quite a few projects you've worked on together now.
With James, yeah.
Yeah.
This is the fourth one. Well, it was funny. I mean, it's crazy how it works out, because I think after Kick-Ass, I just retired. I just said, no more movies, you know. I just kind of had enough, to be honest. And there was things at home, you know. I homeschooled one of my kids, and I hadn't really seen much of them, to be honest. And it was breaking my heart, and I just thought, I've got to take a break. And it wasn't until I took a year off, and I was a teacher. I was a homeschool teacher, and it was the best year of my life, you know.
Oh.
Sat with my son, and Molly was only a couple of years younger, you know. So I got to be a dad, which was such a big deal. And when you see the effect it has on your family when you're actually not doing this job 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
I need to just have a bit more time doing this, you know. So I ended up being like 7 or 8 years, I think. I mean, I was crazy busy, but I was doing stuff I wanted to do. And I set my
life
up in my publishing company, and I was doing stuff. And, you know, kids just keep getting interested, don't they? There's never a bit where you know, it's like, oh, now you do this. Awesome. Let's buy every Lego ever made. Oh, you're into this now. And Molly got into music. It was like, oh, amazing. Right, I'm going to teach you piano. You know, kids just, you know, there's no end to them. So, you know, I had a long time off, and then we were moving house for the schools, you know, and we moved to Agora, and I just thought, okay, you know, I might have to go back to work soon.
You're into too many things.
I was enjoying myself too much. I was being far too happy just writing music for me and watching football games with Jim, Lego, and music with Molly. So I thought, yeah, maybe it's time. If anyone remembers me, it might be time to go back to work. And the plan was to just start, you know, because I'd finished with Kick-Ass, which was a big movie, and I thought,
yeah,
I went out on a high, but no one's going to remember me. I'll get a little indie film or a bit of TV, and I'll work my way back in. And then my agent said, oh, this has just come in, you know, like a few days after I'd said I'm coming back to work, and it was Les Miserables, you know. And I loved, you know, Victor Hugo, I loved the book. I've never seen the musical, but I loved the book.
Yeah,
that'll be good, because that'll blast the cobwebs away, you know, like eight series, and I'd never really done television before. So we did that, and that was got me back into it. And then I thought, okay, let's find a nice little low-budget indie movie no one's going to know about. And literally within a few days of speaking to my new agent, I get a call, and it's James Gunn. And he's like, oh, I've been a fan of yours for years, and you fly to Atlanta tomorrow and come on the set of the Suicide Squad. And it was like, okay, well, that's that plan gone to hell, you know. It was like back in the frying pan, you know. And that was it. That was, you know, I met up with them. I stayed in Atlanta. I ended up staying a few days in Atlanta and just watched them shooting these crazy, huge, big scenes.
Yeah.
So that was how I got back into it. I was trying to ease back in, but it just, when you get a call like that and it's James Gunn.
You know, weirdly, like with Danny, I think there's a similarity with their kind of almost childlike enthusiasm.
There's a lot of similarities. A lot, yeah. I mean, it's good you sort of noticed that. And one of the biggest similarities is, well, there's a lot of similarities between those two. You know, one of them is They're both very bold and brave, and they'll put themselves out there and do stuff that's different. But they're both very intuitive with music. That's out of all of the 60 or 70, whatever movies I've done, those two stand out as like they get it, They both really get how what music does to a story, not even to images, but to a story, really get it.
With something like Suicide Squad, I mean that I can't imagine kind of where you start with something like that, in terms of the number of kind of really sort of bombastic characters that are within that and the kind of the scale of it. But that's a great thing I think about what you do with your music is the music can kind of contradict that sometimes deliberately, in terms of making it more personal, making it more emotional, making it much more kind of instinctive to maybe the kind of psychological, emotional sort of thought process of a character in a way.
I mean, it's brilliant you would say that. I mean, I kind of love going there with that, but you've really got to have the trust of the director because there are two very, very different way, ways of approaching a film score. One is the classical thematic structure. The other is the like, screw it, let's just see what happens when we, you know what I mean? When we put that there, or we do that there, or we do that there. And with Suicide Squad, what was obvious to me, because I read the script in Atlanta, they wouldn't send me the script because of security. So I had to sit in the producer's office and literally, read through it. And two things jumped out at me straight away with how different the script was. One was that I could see the film playing in my head. There's something about James's writing that especially now because I've done 5 or 6 years with him. You're reading the script, but you're watching the film in your head. And what jumped out to me and made me think, oh, okay, we can do this the other way that I like, the non-thematic way, was that it was just so comic book, because that's James's world. I grew up with that in Liverpool. There was a sketchy little kiosk because I lived by the docks. But all the sketchy sailors would go in and get whatever. But there was always a little shelf that had like comic books, and that was my introduction to like DC and Marvel. It was just how colourful and vivid the story was in Suicide Squad, and I thought you can't really do this in a classical way. You've just got to go think of it like turning the page, and then you just as you turn the page, it's like bam with the music or bam, So, and I talked to James about this, and I said, why don't we just entertain? And then we'll see what we can weave together thematically afterwards. And he was like, do it, go for it, So that's what we did in Suicide Squad. It was just, and I love working like that, because thematic structures, it's like doing math, But in the scene, I'm like, oh, I know, let's make that punk or let's make that. There's a shark looking at little pretty fish. Let's have a 60s French theme with a la 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 over it. You said about juxtaposition. But to me, that's cinematic. I grew up loving the spaghetti westerns and Ennio Morricone. I mean, I don't know what my parents were thinking, but I was watching them when I was like five, When you think about what Morricone did for that genre, you've got these spaghetti westerns in this geographically set in this place and it's set in this time. But then he'd have like Italian opera with like 60s electric fuzz guitar with South American pan pipes. It was out of its mind. It was like it had no reason to fit those movies. It just got the essence of it completely. And I've always loved that approach of like, well, let's forget that it's that, and it's here, and it's in this place. What musically could happen that would actually make the scene mean something more to an audience? And it's often not what it should be. It's often the mistakes and the stuff that you just grab out of nowhere, And that was Suicide. That's how we did Suicide Squad.
It's so funny just listening to you saying that. I'm kind of, and what kind of my brain started to think about was Liverpool and the creativity that's come out of that city, particularly musically. You know, the obvious thing it says the Beatles and stuff, but the Lars, for example, one of my favorite bands. And there's something about the bold nature of musical creativity that's come out of Liverpool and the imagery that comes with so much of that. And I don't know whether it's something that you've ever sort of thought about how much being from Liverpool and that being, you know, the place that you grew up has influenced how you write.
I mean, massively, and it's not just the writing, it's the approach, you know, it, or it's the attitude. There's most Liverpool people that just basically remnants of the Irish that came over in the potato famine and stayed there, you know. We're like a little island in England, you know. We're proud of that. That's why we're all called Murphy or Riley or something. We're very proud of that Celtic thing, you know. But you know, I mean, it's Liverpool's got the advantages of that influx of the Irish for sure. But it's also, you know, it's a port town, so you've got the access to all cultures come and
The
get in.
cultures, yeah.
You know, you got that, but you've also got the fact that it's very, very working class. So you got people
Yeah.
who, you know, will fight for what they want, and you know, so all of those things make a difference. You know, it's not just, oh, we've learned from the Beatles. I mean, yeah, the Beatles are what everybody knows, but you know, I remember when I was a kid, you know, getting out of school with me mates and going to Eric's, which is what the Cavern Club used to be. And you'd go in on like a Tuesday afternoon, and in the space of 2 hours, when all my mates were doing geography, we were watching like the Teardrop Explodes and like OMD, and then the Bunnymen at Highlights,
Yeah.
even though they weren't the big what they became. And then we'd go back home and pretend we'd been at school, you know. And at the
Yeah.
time, you just think, oh, this is cool. But looking back, you know, I'm like, why can't I remember more of this? Because that was unbelievable, you know, and the energy. That city, it's because it's a very small city, but the energy it's got and everyone trying to outdo each other. It was, you know, it's for me, you know, it's a mythological city. You know, I'm from there, so I romanticize, but it was really only years and years later and a long time after I left that I look back and I go, how lucky was I to have that culture like smashed in your face with so much attitude and so much energy. And there's no way that hasn't played a huge part in just getting off my arse and just going, I'm going for it. I don't care. I'm going to Hollywood. I don't know where it is, but I'm going. Because that's half of it as well, is just having the stupidity to just throw yourself in there.
It's like kind of just going for it. It's kind of glass half full attitude, isn't it? Absolutely. I remember we used to go come up to the when I started at Radio One with we used to do a show with Colin Murray, who's from Northern Ireland. We used to go up to Liverpool every week to Zanzibar to this club
Oh, I know the
and
club.
yeah, and watch like the
Zanzibar's been around
stands,
since the 60s.
the bands we saw in there, man, it was amazing. And they'd all end up jamming together and do you know what I mean? It'd be like, oh, it was brilliant. It was a
No, it
really
was
special
such a
time.
scene. Yeah, and then you had the later one, like you say, with you know, with Lee Mavis and that with the Lars, and then you get another. It's like it's a Liverpool's funny, like it throws a load of bands out and then it just quietens down, and Manchester does a bit. And Liverpool will come back. There's no straight line about it. It's like one band will come out. Like, you know, for me, it was the Lars and the Real People. And I know those guys, you know, there wouldn't be Oasis without the Real People, you know, they recorded them, they helped them, they, you know. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's what, you know, it's an amazing city to grow up in, really, you know.
Superman then. Oh my God.
Liverpool
From
to
Liverpool to
Superman.
Superman.
I know. Yeah.
I think he would have
That was an
ended up in.
unlikely jump, wasn't
You never know, he could end up there.
That'd be funny, yeah.
I mean, James has done a great, you know, a great job with this film. So many points to it that are just kind of, you can tell that he how much he cares
Every
and how
detail.
much, yeah, the detail is amazing and the tone of it as well is really great. The casting is amazing. You know, not just your Superman but Lois and Lex. I mean,
Yeah. Nichols, wow, what a
oh my
massive
God.
giant performance, you know. It's yeah. And such a lovely guy too, you know. I mean, they're
I
all lovely,
know.
but yeah, I mean, what I love about Nick's performance as well is as much as he's like the worst Lex Luthor of all time, he's actually really, there's something really human about him, isn't
Human,
it? He's
absolutely.
funny and he's sarcastic and he gets irritated with his girlfriend and gets a bit like, you know, insecure, and it's, you know, it's, he just kills it. You know, I always
Yeah.
like Nick Holt as an actor, but in this, he's raised the bar, you know, with this character. Yeah, I think he's
Yeah.
phenomenal in it.
So what were the conversations then with James, you know, when this was greenlit and he's, you know, he needs you on board, he needs you part of this team to musically bring it to life. And with that comes that, you know, there's a pre-existing sonic world of Superman, you know, that
Yes,
theme.
the theme.
How do you approach that, and how did you, yeah, talk to me a little bit
Yeah,
about the whole
it took a
journey.
little bit of, you know, having a quiet word with myself, you know. You know, because I'd done Suicide Squad with James and Guardians of the Galaxy, and it just couldn't have gone better. And it was, you know, and I knew this was coming up, and I thought, I couldn't, could I? You know, there was the stories of John Williams doing his final thing, rumors, and I thought, it's got to be, you know, it's got to be, you know, it's okay. If you're gonna, there's nothing wrong with losing out to John Williams, you know. So I
Yeah.
was like, okay, you know, I was prepared in how I would say to James, oh, listen, man, I get it, it's cool, you've got to, you know, I was kind of ready for,
Yeah.
you know, I understand completely. And then the call came in, and I was, you know, just trying to keep it together. And then when I put the phone down, he said, I'm going to send you the script. And I put the phone down and I just went, oh my God, Superman. Because that, you know, he was, you know, he's the well. He was the first of the comic books. He was the first of the movies. It doesn't, you know, when you grow up with that kind of culture like I did, it doesn't get any bigger. So it didn't really feel real, you know. And then I sort of got in my head. I went, okay, just, you need to think now. You need to. And then I went, oh my God, I'm following John Williams. And then it was like another meltdown of like, oh my God. You know, with a certain person called Hans Zimmer, like, you know, sandwiched in the middle. So it was like John Williams, Hans Zimmer, John Murphy. And I'm like, okay, lad. You know, and it was, what was funny was, I told my wife and she was like, oh my God. And we watched the first Superman movie.
Oh.
I was like, I need to see if this is real, you know. And came on, and I remembered it when I was a kid, and I said, music by John Williams had come up. Me and my wife just looked at each other like, you know, she was like, don't mess this up. And I'm like, so, but you know what? There's always a nervous energy at the beginning with every project, because, you know, they kind of tend to get bigger and bigger and bigger. But once you get going, then, you know, it's like, I always wanted to be a football player, and I always remember, like, you know, football players saying, you get nervous till you run out on the pitch. And when you're out on the pitch, you just go into that other mode. So it was very much like that. You know, once I'd started, it was just get it done. But yeah, we had some great conversations. And, you know, I think when you've got the trust of the director, that makes all the difference. And, you know, how we saw the music in this. And, you know, he said, I need this to be unlike any score I've ever had on one of my films. You know, it's not going to have loads of cool songs. It's not going to have, it's going to have a thematic structure, you know. You know, and he said, but we can still play around with that. But, you know, there was a definite kind of reference laid down. And he was right to do it that way, because, you know, we've got this huge history with the music as much as with the story. So you have to be respectful always, you know.
Yeah.
And when I knew it that he wanted me to work with the John Williams thing, you know, that was with the themes, then, you know, that's kind of a sacred theme, you know, to composers. It's like, okay, I want you to go and play, but I want you to wear Lionel Messi's boots. You know, it's like, it was a bit like that. It's like, oh, okay. It was like working with something very, very sacred. But it was amazing.
How do you start? Do you sit at the piano? Do you have a starting point, you know, in terms of you read the script, you take a breath, like diving off the diving board, kind of into it? What's the kind of diving in point, or how do you dive in? Is it different every time?
No, it's not. It just changed over the years. You know, in the early days of, you know, Lock, Stock and Snatch, like, beer, get the guitar on and watch the movie while I was playing and just
Yeah.
record it all, you know.
Wow.
And I would just jam along and, like, not knowing what was going to happen next, and then just grab something else. And that's how I used to do it.
Amazing.
It's a terrible way to score a movie, by the way, but you do get
No,
some.
it sounds fantastic,
I would
that
literally be
energy of
jamming
the
it. Yeah,
life.
I would be writing and jamming as I was watching it for the first time, and that's how I used to do it, which was a lot of fun. But you know, and then over the years, I learned how you're supposed to do it, and it was definitely a transition over the years. But what I learned worked best for me was actually not to think about the music at all, is to just read the script and understand the story. And then when I had the movie, you know, I would watch it and watch it. But really, it was, you know, because people say, oh, you write music to picture. And that's not what composers do. We write music to
Yeah.
story. It's all about the story. The picture is just another medium that the story ends up on, you know. It's always about the story. So I just try and, you know, I read and read the script, and they hadn't even shot it when he first sent it to me. And then I would just think about it and go for a walk and think, and then just let it just, you just kind of absorb it, you know. And even when I'd want to write something, I wouldn't. And it was only when I felt like I understood, you know, it was only when I felt like I was carrying the emotions of the story and I understood why Lex feels that way, or why Superman is compelled to do this, or why Lois is worried about the delay. You know what I mean? You kind of absorbed all these things, and then I'll start writing in my head. I won't even pick anything up at that point. I'll just write things and just see what pops up. And most of the time, it's garbage, you know, but sometimes you'll suddenly feel it a bit deeper, and then you'll hear the theme. Like the Lex Luthor theme just came in as I was thinking about it. And then I go back and then try and figure out what the hell it was, you know. You know, because I'm a terrible pianist. I'm a better guitar player, but you know, if I try to write music, you know, I'm limiting myself to me, you know, me limited abilities as a pianist, and I don't want to write with any limitations. I'd rather imagine than try to figure it out, you know. So that's kind of where my process got to, and that's worked better for me. So I kind of put off picking anything up or guitar till as late as possible. I just try and imagine it all first.
I guess as well, you never really know how much music's needed, really, do you? Or do you?
A good question. I think over the years you get a rote sense of where it would work. But I'm a big fan of only use music if you have to, you know. I mean, my favorite movies like The Godfather and movies like this, there's not a lot of music in it, you know, because what you're doing it, you know, if you're using it all the time, it's different with superhero films because there's kind of an expectation and it's all amped. But broadly speaking, with movies, you know, nothing kills a film more than just too much music. If you don't hold it back for when you need it, then you're lessening the impact of when it comes in, you know. The best scores to me are the ones where they just let the film breathe, and then suddenly you hear that trumpet play the Godfather motif, or you suddenly hear the Jaws thing, or you know what I mean? It's like then it sweeps you up because you weren't expecting it. Or so I think every composer could do this, but you know, I could read a script and kind of spot it, figure out where it should be within like about 98%, I think, of where it will end up, just because all I've done for the last 40 years, I think, you know, you just figure it out. But I always question if something really needs to be there.
Is there a suite or a cue or part of the score that you're, I don't know, not most proud of, but that's particularly memorable for you for whatever reason from Superman?
Oh yeah, the one I did two of the themes in there I wrote with my daughter when she was at school. She was actually still at school, and that was great. Yeah, I mean, she wrote some stuff on Guardians of the Galaxy too.
Amazing.
That's always lovely, you know, because she's brutally honest, and she's the only one that'll tell me when I'm rubbish. And I'd written this theme for Lex Luthor. You know, it's the scene where we're Ultraman. It's quite early in the film, and Ultraman flies back to the Luthor Corp HQ. Reveal as the camera pulls back, and it says, and then the audience knows, oh, this is where the bad guys live, you know. I had this theme and I had a motif, and I was saying, you know, how can we cool this up a bit? Because Ultraman's really cool, and the way it was shot, he's like coming in from the corner, and looks like a music video. It's amazing. And she just took it and just did this really cool trip hop track under it, you know. It was like something Tricky would have done, only she's Tricky, you know. It was like something off Maxine. I was like, dude. And then James loved it. So you know, getting to work with her was
Oh,
amazing.
that's awesome.
I know. Well, I was determined for the, you know, I had such an overt snobbery about not reading music that I was determined that she would have a chance to develop and do her own thing before. Now she can read music, but it's like for ages I was trying to hold it off her, you know, so it wouldn't squash her creativity. But she played on the film too. She played the Crystal Bachette in the Love Themes, which is like crazy
Yeah.
huge instruments of glass rods.
I
Yeah.
went up to Cliff Martinez's place and
Yeah,
he
he's got
played,
one clip, yeah.
yeah, and he
Yeah, used it
played
on
it for
someone in
me.
the, yeah. Oh,
It
it's
was,
next door in the
have
studio,
you
yeah.
got, oh man, you got one as, they're
It's next
amazing.
door. I know. It's the craziest instruments I've ever played in my life. And I got it for this movie. But when it turned up and we put it up, it took a day to build it, and it's all these, and it's a full size one too.
It looks a bit like Superman's his house, but
Yeah,
you've
I
turned it
know.
upside down.
It's exactly why I wanted to get it. I'm thinking the ice fortress, the castle of ice, what can be crystal? Crystal. I went, hang on, what's that thing? Because I know Cliff, we've done, like, we have like a composer get together every few months, and there's about 10 of us all chat, you know.
Oh.
He's a lovely, lovely guy. Love.
Yeah, what a
He
nice
nearly
man.
scored on Solaris. It was like phenomenal. But the only one that could play it properly was Molly. So when we'd set it up and you dip your hands in water, and you know, she couldn't even stretch to the end of it, you know, and she was like, but she was the only one who could really play it. So she ended up playing it on the movie and then went back to school. So
Oh my God, that's
yeah.
so brilliant.
I know, yeah. And she's just like, yeah, okay. I'm like, you know, it's for Superman. She's going, yeah.
Don't ever change.
I
So great.
know, I know.
Yeah.
Well, the funniest one when the head of DC, Peter Safran, a brilliant guy, he, me and Molly went to see a game with him, and I met David. You know, he's all in disguise. I mean, this was like a year and a half ago, and he had the beanie on and the big beard, and you know, but you could tell he was huge, and he had the eyes, so there was no mistaking. And I'm talking, and Molly's talking to Peter's daughter, and they're chatting away because teenage girls and that. And I said, Molly, you should meet Dave. And she just went, oh, yeah, hi. And then carried on talking to Peter's daughter. And you could see his face kind of like, oh, okay. And then when it was over, I went, you know who that was, don't you? And I went, no, I said, that was Superman. And she went, oh, cool. And I was like, but it was Superman. You know, I was more impressed than anybody, like, you know, and she was like, oh, yeah.
Just, you know, in terms of like working with David Fleming as well, you know, and stuff,
Yeah.
and it being great to see David's work as well. I got the chance to actually chat to him
Yeah.
with Gustavo when they worked together on The
Yeah.
Last of Us, which was great as well.
Yeah,
Did you guys
brilliant.
work much together, or was that just kind of kept
No,
quite
it's a
separately?
shame, you know, because Dave came on in the cut and it was just, you know, we were in different places. I was working on different stuff. He was working on different stuff. But that would have been cool, you know, with Kick-Ass, I got to work with Henry, you know, and that was fun. But you know, at that point, everyone's just locked in working away.
Yeah.
But you know, there are a lot of cues that I've got both of us in the cues. You know, I had a guitar-y type thing for the very end of the movie when Lex is being led away, and then Dave came in and added these beautiful strings on top of it. You know, and there's bits where there's action stuff, and then he's using the themes from this. So there's a lot of collaborative work there. It's just a shame we didn't get to sit and have a beer together.
you seen 28 Years yet?
No, I haven't, not yet. I can't wait to see it, but
I mean, I
really.
love that just when you're talking about, you know, that original conversation we were having about Danny kind of, you know, about there being no rules and kind of going for it and stuff, and the support and the commitment he's given like a young band, like Young Fathers, to kind of come in and
Yeah.
never scored a film before
No, that's great he did that, yeah.
give them the support and the kind of encouragement to do it has been, it's like, it's so inspiring. Do you know what I mean? In terms of that,
No,
how
he's great
he's.
like that, Danny. I mean, he's brave, you know, if he, you know, he trusts his gut. That's what I was saying. Him and James are very similar, that, you
Yeah.
know, if he thinks something's going to be better, he'll do it regardless of what's gone on before or what people expect, you know.
And then, because you mentioned Kick-Ass a couple of times, but obviously there's that Aaron connection as well, Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
Oh God, yeah, because he's in it, isn't he? Yeah, I
There
can't
you
wait
go.
to see him. I know.
Oh, I think you'll love it.
Yeah.
What's next? Please tell me you're
Sleep.
not taking too much of a break
I'm
again.
gonna take you know, it's gonna be
2 days.
no way. No, I'm gonna yeah, just a lot of chilling with the kids.
And get ready for the next Superman film.
Oh yeah, I think I need a bit more sleep first. Yeah, Molly's going to New York. She's gonna live in New York for 4 years.
Oh.
She got into Northeastern, so she's gonna be leaving us soon. So I've got
Oh.
6 weeks left, so I'm gonna make the most of that.
How old is she, John?
He's 18.
I've got 17 boys, so I'm about to enter that world, yeah.
Yeah, it's I did a good job of not thinking about it, but now it's coming, so I just want to make the most of the time left in there. And my son's in Connecticut, which is not too far from where she'll be, so I
Yeah.
think I'll be like quietly in disguise moving to Connecticut or New York and just checking in on the kids and make sure they're all right without them knowing me, you know. I know when
Just
I'm
need
there.
to constantly like bring her in as a collaborator on your
I
on every
know, I
project, and then
know.
you're laughing.
Well, we're working now because she's got to shoot some videos in a few weeks and she's releasing some new stuff. So, you know, I've got to, you know, I'm lucky I get to sort of work with her and record her vocals now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just enjoy that. And then when she's gone, I'll sit and have a beer and go, okay, what do I want to do now?
Yeah, get that balance right. I absolutely
We
hear
do.
you. Listen, it's so nice getting to chat to you. Really,
Oh, it's been great, yeah.
really, really lovely. It's kind of, yeah, I've just been, yeah, when the opportunity came up, I was like, oh my God, please. So I'm so glad that we could find the time, and I really appreciate you taking the time. And
No,
huge
it's great. It's been
congratulations
phenomenal, you know. Yeah, thank you.
on this and everything. And it really has been lovely with that new 28 film being out, how many people are being reminded of
Yeah.
your beautiful contribution to that whole
Oh,
start of that journey. So it's lovely to revisit that as
thanks.
well.
That means a lot. Thanks.
As if you need telling, that's John Murphy's iconic main theme from 28 Days Later, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the lovable Liverpudlian composer. I was actually interviewing Cillian Murphy this week, and I was talking to him about the fact that I'd spoken to John, and one of the things that he said was that he loves how much the music, both from 28 Days Later and Sunshine, continues to have a life of its own and kind of pops up everywhere. And he loves that he kind of comes across that and just reminds him of those times as well. So just a little insight there for you. My huge thanks to John for taking time away from his family to talk to us about his career. It really was a genuine pleasure and I loved the conversation. Superman is still in cinemas now, so do get along to see it in the cinemas if you haven't already. EdithBowman.com is the place to find every single episode of the podcast, including my chats about Superman with James Gunn and David Fleming, as well as Danny Boy and Young Fathers on 28 Years Later. There are over 500 episodes that you can dive into. Follow us on your socials. We're at Soundtracking UK, and we also have a YouTube channel called Soundtracking Extra. We'd love for you to subscribe to. We genuinely appreciate you taking the time to listen to the podcast. We are just a little independent podcast that tries to swim in this giant ocean of podcasts that are around that have, you know, a lot of them have a lot of support from big broadcasters or big marketing budgets. And we are very much a little independent, I was about to say tadpole, but I'm not going to use the word tadpole. We are a small fish in a very big pond. And so anytime that you subscribe to us or you listen to an episode or you spread the word or you like one of our posts or you subscribe to YouTube, it means the absolute world. So thank you so much. And we really appreciate the support. Next up, I finally get to share my conversation with Michael Pierce, talking about Echo Valley and a few other things. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.